Religion has many victims, and these are the stories of how they survived. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Awakening. I'm your host, Heather.
And I'm Jezebel, or Tamara. Welcome in, and it's nice to meet you, Marla.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, and we are so excited to be sitting down here with Marla Taviano.
Yep, you
did
got
it correctly. Okay, thank goodness, because I was terrified. Names are not my strong suit. But this month, we are actually going to be talking about Dr. James Dobson all month long. His teachings have impacted several generations of kids in negative ways, to where they have literally had to unpack this harm in therapy. And their parents, at some point, truly did believe that they were raising their children in godly manners. And some of them took those manners too far. Some of them didn't take them far enough, but the scars still remain on the kids. And Marla, she speaks out all the time about this harm. And I was so excited to be able to have her on the show today because she's such an incredible artist. She's such a powerful voice on this topic. And, you know, when we talk about this stuff, it's so severe because people don't realize how bad trauma messes people up. And we talk about that a lot on this show, how trauma literally rewires your entire brain, okay? And that impacts you so severely, and you carry those scars on into adulthood. Heck, I didn't even start unpacking mine until I was 36. So, you know, and that's kind of crazy. And it's because of the things that were handed to my parents as good parenting advice. So I am, again, really excited to be sitting down with you today. And I just, you know, we always start off the show by asking people, what did your religious upbringing look like before you, you know, deconstructed and all that?
Yeah, great question. Okay, so I just turned 50 on Halloween. So I was born in
Well, dang, you look
1975.
Great for 50.
Oh,
see?
That's
welcome to our club.
I love it too. I love this club. It's such a good club. And I was the first born child to my parents, and they were what I would now call white evangelical
Okay.
Christians, conservative evangelical Christians. I never put those labels or adjectives on that until in recent years, because I just thought that we were Christians. There was a lot that I didn't see being in my bubble. But yeah, so church was my life growing up. I mean, my mom says that she was in church as soon as she could be. I was born on a Friday morning. I don't know if she went to church that Sunday, but soon after. So I can't remember a time when I wasn't getting up early for Sunday school and church, then coming home for lunch, maybe a nap, and then go back for Sunday night church, and then get together with the groups of people from church, and then Wednesday youth group. My mom and dad went to prayer meeting. And then in like junior high and high school, so many youth group activities. Even on Friday nights, we had fifth quarter after the football game, where all the teenagers would come back to
Wow,
church
that's crazy.
eat pizza and play games. And the idea was like, keep the kids off the streets and out of their bedrooms. And then I went to a Christian college, and then I worked at a church camp, and then I was I taught at a Christian school. I was a missionary. Like
Oh, wow. You did all the things. She's
just
like,
did
I'm checking
everything.
off all the bases here. Like,
I was a poster child. I mean, I was just in so deep. And that's the irony of people telling me when I deconstructed, oh, you must never have been saved, or maybe you never had a relationship with God.
Exactly. Like it was the same for me because I was a pastor's kid. Like I was raised on the front pew in my dad's church. I was sold out for Jesus. I was traveling around preaching this stuff to other people, right? Like, don't tell me I wasn't a Christian. I remember arguing with people. And it's the funny thing too, is I think about it, and the arguments that I was having are the same things that people say to me now. And I just kind of laugh at them because it's like, oh Lord, you're one of them. But you
I
know,
used to say the same thing. That's what I tell all the Christians all the time. It's like, you just need to find Jesus. And I'm like, why is he always lost? Why don't I get to find him? Why is everything find happiness, find purpose, find joy, find Jesus, find the Bible, find forgiveness? Why are those things are always me on a search?
And it's like they act like you can't have those things. Like you can't have joy. You can't have a good life, whatever purpose, unless you have their version of Jesus. Because I remember thinking that, like encountering people and thinking, man, you're so lost. I feel so bad for you. And in all reality, they were probably 10 times freer than I had ever been, you know? So it's wild how we go from this position to being completely sold out for Jesus, willing to give every bit of ourselves until there's nothing left for this faith. And then we start questioning things, don't we? So, what led to your deconstruction?
Well, I'm always jealous of all the people that say that they started questioning when they were younger because I now looking back, I realized that I did have doubts and questions, but because I so badly wanted to be good and righteous and holy and I wanted to please God, I looked at those doubts as the devil was trying to attack my faith. I needed to
Portals
dig
of the
in.
demons.
Yeah, so I did have questions, but I was just too good of a Christian to let any of those get a hold in my life. So I would figure out the answers. And that's the great thing about being a Christian is you can always find some kind of answer for it,
Absolutely.
like find a loophole, or you can just say God's ways are higher than ours or
Yes.
whatever.
And
God of the
you can
gap.
find
God of the
somebody on
gap.
the internet somewhere that is confirming your bias that you already have, right? And the reality is I remember going and looking for answers and being frustrated because I could find more people to agree with my bias than what agreed with the truth. And that is so irritating to me because I really wish that there was a way you could get rid of all that dis and misinformation out there and just have the truth that's out there because there's so much false doctrine out there that's being sold to people as truth. And they're making life-altering decisions based upon that truth that causes a lot of harm. You know, to a lot of people that in family with them or in community with them, I always say they end up bleeding all over people that never cut them because they're always looking for an enemy to condemn because that's what we were taught to do. If you didn't believe like me, you're automatically my enemy, you know? So
And you were
I,
sold out.
yeah,
Most of
yep.
us were like, we were diehards. We laid it all on the altar. And
Yeah.
we're willing to leave whatever we needed to do on that altar if it meant us being basically a martyr for Jesus.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm reading a book right now. It hasn't actually come out yet. It's Christine Dumais. She wrote
Oh,
Jesus
I
and John Wayne.
pre-ordered that. Yes, I
So
pre-ordered that one.
yeah, Live, Laugh, Love. And I'm in the I'm reading about Elizabeth Elliot right now, but yeah, it's fascinating to read that history of white women Christianity
Yes,
and where it came
yes.
from and how it all came to be. But yeah, for me, I forgot this part of my story when I used to tell about my deconstruction. I would start like around 2009, 2010, when I read a book called The Hole in Our Gospel by Richard Stearns. And he says in this book, I was reading it at the pool with my kids, and he said that if your good news, your gospel, is not good news for an AIDS orphan in Uganda, then there's a hole in it. Like, if you're not helping them tangibly, physically, right now, and I wasn't. Like, to me, saving souls was the most important thing, not feeding people or taking care of their illnesses or whatever. They could go to heaven, which is such a like enslaver mentality. That's the enslavers used to say that kind of stuff too. Who cares what happens to you now? You can go to heaven when you die. Isn't that good enough? And so they would bring preachers to preach to their enslaved people to get them saved so they could feel better about how they were treating them. And that seeped into my mentality as well. Later, I realized that around 2007, I was working on a book proposal. My agent led me down this rabbit trail of the end times, and I was reading about all these different things, and I started having some questions because there were things that actually weren't in the Bible that I thought were in the Bible, and the things about the rapture, and they're like the Left Behind books or all this
Yes.
stuff. So that was kind of that made me question some things and made me very uncomfortable. And then in 2000, I forget, it was 10 or 11 maybe, we helped a black pastor friend plant a multi-ethnic church. And then in
Oh, cool.
2012, when Trayvon Martin was killed, and one of my new friends who was black had said on Facebook, "Why are my white friends not talking about Trayvon Martin?" And I thought, well, I don't even know who this person is. And so I
Oh,
looked, and then
wow.
I started like researching and found out all these things. I started reading books by black authors. I had read a million, not a million, but so many books in my lifetime,
Yeah.
and realized that they were almost all by white people. So I started reading exclusively black authors in 2015, 16, 17. Oh, I haven't actually stopped because there's so
I
many
haven't
that
either.
I need to catch up on. But waking up, that's just what it felt like, was I was just waking up like I had been asleep. Or I had just, like I said, lived in this bubble and didn't even
Yeah.
realize what I didn't know, and that my experience was
Right.
so limited. And I thought I knew the truth, but I wasn't listening to anybody else's perspective. And then I had gay friends. Like before, I didn't have any gay friends. I probably did have gay friends. They just didn't feel safe telling me they
Yeah,
were gay
same.
because they knew that what I believed. So yeah, over a period of 10 years or something, everything just started to crumble. And it's actually, there's so many ways to frame it, so many ways to look at it, and it can be terrifying, it can be sad, it can be scary. But I look at it now as there was this wholeness, this truth, something in the middle, and everything that I had built up around it that just wasn't. It wasn't right. It wasn't true. It wasn't loving.
Yeah.
And that's what fell away. And what I have left, like I didn't lose any of the good stuff. I mean, I lost
Yeah.
some friends. I had a family member disown me. There was a lot of hard stuff, but
Yeah.
I wouldn't trade any of it. And I would never, ever, ever, ever go back. And I took a long time to wake up, and that was a privilege. Like I got to
Yes.
do that. And I think now we never should have taken so long to wake up. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes.
was telling people in Birmingham jail in 1962 or 4 or 6 or something that the white moderates are taking too long to
Yeah.
to fight for freedom and equality for everybody. And here we are, all these many years later, we're still taking so long, and now we're going backward, but we don't have the time because
No.
people are. They're not surviving this. Like it's
No.
this,
Yeah.
and what, like you, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And
No,
then
you
you just
can't.
really want to tell everyone, just like I wanted to
Yes.
tell everyone about Jesus. And now I want to tell
Yes.
everyone
Yes.
yes,
I
about the
almost
truth of
feel
history.
like, because I was part of the Christian faith 36 years, okay, birth to 36, and I was preaching, teaching, I taught children's church, Sunday school, you name it, led Bible studies. Like, I taught this stuff to so many people. And when I started learning the truth, I almost felt just as obligated to talk and share with as many more people, even more people than I did that message, because this message is so much more important. It's so much more powerful, because waking up is the most incredible thing that you can do. Like, it just is, because it's life changing for you, but it's life changing for your community and people around you, because you start to notice things that you didn't notice before. You start to care about things that you didn't care about before. You do help people that are in need that you didn't help before. Like, goodness, I was part of religious spaces for 36 years. I can count on one time how many hand, one hand, how many times we actually helped people in our local community. And this was several
Now,
different churches. Like, it's crazy.
exactly.
We
And
didn't
now
do.
I, oh,
Go
I
ahead. No, go
apologize.
ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, now I realized how much I lacked in just basic humanity.
Yeah.
Just for anyone, and regardless of who they were, as a Christian or as an apostolic, I did not hold
anyone with empathy or compassion or consideration or being kind or showing them grace. Like those words were like, I would talk about it. I would be like, oh, I do this or I do that. And when I left, I realized I lacked humanity as a Christian.
So, what led you to finally start speaking out?
Well, I'd always been speaking out.
I'm always at 11. I'm just kidding.
I mean, that is actually true.
That's me too.
I wrote a little book of poetry last year called Mouth. That was my dad's nickname
Oh,
for
I
me
love
when
that.
I was younger. So it's kind of funny because I was a very good Christian girl and obeying all the rules and everything, but I guess I did have a mouth on me, not like a cussing kind of mouth, but a don't tell me what to do or
Yes,
you're not the
me
boss of
too.
me or whatever.
Defiant.
Oh, yeah. So naturally, as I was just sharing with women, so I wrote four books as a conservative evangelical Christian that were traditionally published. And I would go around and speak to women. These books are about marriage and sex. And I'm telling women how to be good Christian, submissive wives.
She's
And so,
completely deviating. I
yeah.
love this.
So, well, here's the deal. We are, each one of us, are uniquely equipped and qualified to continue to speak out, like, against these things now because I was speaking out for them. So I know them like the back of my hand. And I've been getting a lot of new followers lately who don't realize my background and will say some things about how, like, either I don't know things about Christians or not being fair to Christians. And I just laugh because I get I earned all of that because I was that. So when I rip apart James Dobson's books and like fi figuratively and literally, when I rip those apart and I make fun of them and I point out what crap they are, I have my own books that I do the same exact thing with. And I'm honest about that. I wrote these things. They are
So
in print.
interesting.
They are horrible. I mean, it could have been worse, but it's pretty bad. Some things that I wrote that I believe that I thought. And so that's since I've always spoken out and since I know this stuff and since I wrote this stuff and said this stuff, then that's what gives me this strong desire to keep speaking out. So I've never really been afraid to do that. It's gotten me in some trouble because I haven't been one to like stop and think for a while before I say things. So I was deconstructing out loud in real time. So when I would hear something, learn something, and I just put it right out there. Hey, listen, like we're all racist. Wait, that like that doesn't go over well
I
with
did
people.
that too at first, and I had to reel it back in a little bit because I was a little bit too hot and heavy at first.
And honestly, I don't think that there is one right way to do that because
No.
even, I mean, people who do this for a living, and even Black women who do it for a living, don't have like a consensus on this is how
No.
we talk about it, this is how we treat white people. You've got some women that are saying we need to be gentle with white women who are just learning, and others saying we're not coddling them. This is not going to work this way. So I think it takes everyone because you don't know how some people are going to respond. So I had a sister who disowned me and another sister who didn't disown me because the one was able to take what I was saying and kind of sift through it and filter through it and go at her own pace. And the other one just put up defenses and couldn't handle the cognitive dissonance. And so yeah, I don't know what I would change. I don't remember everything that I did. I'm reading back through my journals right now 'cause I'm divorced. My husband cheated. We had like I'm writing this memoir, but the journals that I'm reading back through 'cause I had 65 journals filled with stuff. I lost my blog over the years. I don't know if I can recover that. Maybe I don't want to. But I rough drafted a lot of my blog posts in my journal. So I'm seeing this. I'm seeing myself deconstruct. I'm seeing what I have to say. I'm
Yes.
seeing my anger. Like, oh
Yes.
wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, like the end of my story, and I'm not at the end of my story, but the end of my deconstruction journey, I do not go to church. I don't call myself a Christian. But I have friends. I just met a pastor friend of mine. We've been friends online for 5 years. Just met him this past week in real life for the first time. My brother is a pastor. I have tons of Christian friends, pastor friends.
Yeah.
There's my bottom line is I don't care what you believe as long as your beliefs aren't harming people.
Yes, that's what I say all the time. Like,
So,
I don't care what you believe in, just as long
yeah.
as you're not hurting people
Yeah.
with it, right?
Yeah,
Like,
but
if you're
I
trying to hurt people, control them, manipulate
yeah.
them, try to steal their money, whatever. No, you're wrong. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be supportive of that. And I am going to call out that harm.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Every day, all day. I know for me, a really good book, and I don't know if either of one of you have read it, but when I was trying to figure out myself as a white privileged woman, right, it was really difficult for me to wrap my head around that concept because, you know, I'm like, I'm not privileged. And then I read They Were Her Property.
Oh, yeah. That's
Yes.
really, it's on my bookshelf behind me. Yep.
I
Yeah.
tell you, the
She's like,
minute I
been
read that
there.
book,
Yeah.
that opened it up all the way for me. Like that tore away any film over my eyes. It was
Yeah.
just raw. It was there, and it was to the point that I was able to look at people of the minority community and of the Black community and actually be able to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to my friends and stuff. I'm really sorry because I never thought of putting myself in that space or in that position to be that open and raw with myself. And I appreciate that I'm with friends who understand that
Yeah.
being a gam-gam of biracial children and trying to figure out how do I take my Southern raising racist family and what they say and how they say it, and knowing that I was a part of that in my Christian life all those years. Now, how do I deconstruct that and pay honor to two beautiful souls that were born into this world? And
Yeah.
then when I read that book, I was like, that's it.
It's changing around here.
It's changing.
And that's really what it's about, though. You know, I've got adult children, and we left the church when they were in their teens. So we deconstructed as a family pretty much. And my kids are so aware of racism, anti-racism. Like, they love to play video games, right? Well, if they're in there playing video games with their friends and one of their friends is getting all popping off at the mouth, my sons will call their friends out and be like, yo, I don't know who you are right now. I don't really feel like playing with you anymore. And they'll get out the game. They won't even keep playing with them because their language is too bad. Like, dude, no, we don't talk like that around here. Like, we don't talk about our friends like that. I don't even know who you are. And I'm like, I did something right there, But it's not easy getting to that point, right? And there's so much healing that it takes to heal from these things. And again, we are supposed to be talking about Dobson, but a lot of what we are talking about is things that he taught. He taught about these things. He was the one who gave our parents permission to literally beat the hell out of us, right? And I remember my dad, like, oh, you will obey me. There was no option to not obey that man. And he would beat the hell out of us. Like, he was so abusive. And it was because of teachings like James Dobson's. He felt like we had to obey him no matter what. We weren't allowed to backtalk. We weren't allowed to speak up. We weren't allowed to say, no, don't hit me anymore. That hurts. I remember begging my father to stop beating me because he was hurting me so badly. He did not stop. I remember putting my hands back there. He cracked my knuckles, you know? And I still remember him just not caring, right? He did not care. My mother, she hated spanking us. And I could tell that it bothered her way more than it ever bothered my father, but she still did it anyhow because that was how she was raised. Everybody in this generation has been beat, right? And now here I am with my kids, and what was I handed? Dobson books, Dobson parenting classes. And there I am spanking my own children. Now I'm thankful my children have deconstructed, they've been to therapy, and they have been able to unpack the things that were done to them in the name of raising godly children, right? But at the same time, I still carry wounds of being raised as a godly child underneath those type of teachings and that type of parenting. And that doesn't just go away. I am no contact with my father today because of the abuse I suffered as a child. And everybody in the family will say, well, you only have one father. But I didn't have a father. I had an abuser. That's what I had. And they don't understand that. But they knew how abusive my father was. And they never stepped up. They never did anything. They never protected us kids. Nobody in the family did because we were all in a Christian home and we didn't talk about those things. It was forbidden to be spoken about. And I just think of all the people that continue to be harmed by his teachings, even today, okay? Because they still have all that material out there, but now they're starting to push a different message to parents because Focus on the Family posts regularly to the boomer parents about their estranged children. That's what they've started to post about. Because the results of all those teachings have caused so many of us to cut our family members off because so many of them have been so abusive. And it's not just the abuse, it's the abuse and the racism, it's the abuse and the homophobia, it's the abuse and the mistreatment of people that are just completely different from you and demonizing anything that you refuse to try and even understand. And that is a product of all of that. So, I don't
And
feel like, no, go ahead.
can I say this too, just to add on to what you said? It is abuse with individuals with disabilities as well.
Absolutely.
Because I
Absolutely.
think that sect, that group, that population gets overlooked. But if
Oh,
you have a
yeah.
child with a disability or with autism or is born with something,
Yeah.
they are usually made fun of inside of these churches.
Oh,
They are
yeah.
usually not accepted. They're usually not included into Sunday school. If you don't act just like the other children in
Yes.
Sunday school, then there must be something wrong with your mother and father and their parenting skills. And I was raised that was those deformities was a curse of God.
Yes.
And
And
that
my,
was wrong. And I was
yeah.
like, what do you do when you have a child that was born without an immune system? Or what do you do when you have a child with autism? What do you do with a child that's born with Down syndrome and you're sitting in the church, 20, 25 years ago, and they're teaching you that he can be healed, and they're doing basically hands-on of praying for you if you're autistic
Yes.
to pray the autism out of you because they believe there's a
Yes.
demon possession.
Yes. And my parents, they did
Side
not believe in neurodivergence. They didn't believe in
note.
ADHD, autism, none of that stuff. I was just diagnosed about 6 months ago, odd ADHD, so I have autism and ADHD. And I think of how many beatings I got as a kid for being hyperactive or, being, not respectful. They didn't think I was respectful because I don't make eye contact, right? I've gotten slapped across the face for that multiple times, because it's disrespectful, but that's the autism, right? It's so uncomfortable for me. Now I learned how to perform. I can perform, but I never quite fit in because I was always the odd one out because I was always different. And that's because of who I am, right? And it doesn't. I'm glad to know who I am. I'm glad to know that this is what I have. And it makes so much sense why my brain is the way it is and things like that. But my goodness, my life could have been so much easier if I would have gotten this diagnosis before my children were grown. Like, that's the reality. Like, I raised four children, and I had them kids like pretty well back to
Neurodivergent
back
minds. Yep.
with neurodivergence. And I struggled with my mental health so severely. And a good part of that was because of my neurodivergence that I didn't even know I had. And they
Yeah.
put me on so many different medications to just stabilize me. And none of those medicines really worked. They just kept me here. But they didn't really work the way that they should have because that wasn't what I needed for my brain.
Yeah.
So it's crazy, you know? So what made you start making the art?
Well, okay, so as a kid, I used to always cut things up and I would make books. I would cut things out of like JCPenney and Sears catalogs and then make these books. And I wrote about it in my first book, which is called From Blushing Bride to Wedded Wife. So the book that I tell people, don't ever buy this book because
She says it's
it's
terrible.
trash. But I wrote about it in that book that I would make these books of me and my future husband and our kids, and I'd go through and put all the things in there. And so I've always loved to like cut things up. I'm not an artist. Like drawing, it makes me like stresses me out. Art class in high school, I hated it. My daughters can all draw. I cannot. But so the art actually started in 2023. I started writing. Okay, so I wrote those four books in 2006, 7, 8, and 9. Then I did a bunch of ebooks. We moved to Cambodia, blah, blah, blah. Came back in 2020. And I've been trying to write the story of my deconstruction, but I just couldn't. It was like slipping through my fingers. Every time I try to write, something would change. I would learn something else. I'm like, how can I do this? I was trying to make it perfect. And I was reading a Rob Bell book in 2021 called Everything is Spiritual. And I wrote in the margins, that's it, I'm gonna write poetry. And so in September of 2021, I self-published a book called Unbelieve: Poems on the Journey to Becoming a Heretic. And
I
I
love
took
that.
all of the parts of my deconstruction and I just made them in short little poems. They don't rhyme. Some are really short, some are like a page, but it kind of just tells my story and it goes through. They're grouped by different things like racism and white supremacy, the queer becoming queer affirming, all these different things that I on my journey. And then I did a second book called Jaded, which is a poetic reckoning with white evangelical Christian indoctrination. And then the third book is Whole. And something about putting the pieces of ourselves back together. I don't have the book here
I
to
love
remember the
this. I
subtitle.
love this so much because
Yeah,
you did
so
such a 180 from where you were to where we're like, whoop,
yeah,
let's drop this nugget
so
on
I did I had a messed up copy. So I self-published Unbelieve and then I started working with the publisher, Lake Drive Books, and they republished Unbelieve. So the whole thing, the trilogy is now published with Lake Drive Books. But I had a couple messed up copies of Unbelieve that I couldn't sell. And so I just got this idea. I also had an old Frog and Toad book. And I decided when I was doing a crafting day with my nieces, who were 6 and 8, that I would take my poems and find a Frog and Toad illustration that kind of matched it a little bit. So it'd be like a meme. And I glue the poem on the Frog and Toad illustration. Well, then I start looking through the book. I'm like, oh, there's so many because they're really angsty. And sometimes Toad is like writing things. And I have poems about writing, I have a poem about waking up and Toad's waking up. And I was like, oh, this is so much fun to put these. And I don't have to draw. I don't have to do. I just have to cut and glue. And then my sister had a laminator, so I'm doing this. I take photos of them, put them online on Instagram, and I could not believe the response. Everyone was like, "These are so cool. We love these. These are so cute." And I thought, "Oh, hey, wait a second." And I had so much fun doing it. So I started looking for kids' books at Goodwill, other things from my childhood, Sesame Street, Care Bears, Rainbow Bright, and just cutting out poems, gluing them on, laminating them, posting them, giving them away. And it turned into this. I
This
mean,
is brilliant,
I've
though. I
been
love
doing
it.
it almost every day for almost like 3 years. It's
And you're
August of
actually,
2023.
you're the first person that we've had on the show that writes poetry, because Jezebel
Oh.
writes poetry too.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So then I went from there, and I don't know if you cuss on your podcast, but I
No,
started.
yes,
Okay,
you're
so
good.
I'm like getting VeggieTales and Sesame Street and Frog and Toad and Jesus.
VeggieTales.
And so Jesus is saying like, fuck the patriarchy, fuck capitalism,
I
white
love it.
supremacy. And
That's
it,
what caught my attention, though, was because she had like VeggieTales on there and it was the adult language. And I was like, I
yeah.
love this woman right here.
And now it's been getting kind of goofy where I take the VeggieTales and I learned that Phil Vischer, the creator, his mom made some rules about it. Like he couldn't have Jesus be a vegetable and the
Yeah.
veggies were not allowed to get saved. Like they couldn't have a redemptive relationship with God. So I made this art where I take illustrations. I have tons of Jesus storybooks and that I
Yeah.
just get whenever I go to Goodwill or anything. And I'm tearing out pictures of Jesus. And if he's talking to like Nicodemus or he's talking to Mary or something, then I'll
Yeah.
put Larry the cucumber. I'll cut Larry out of a VeggieTales book and put Larry there and let Larry have this relationship with
With
Jesus that he wasn't allowed
Jesus.
to have. And then I started putting things like,
Brilliant.
Jesus says to Larry, dude, I don't even have a water buffalo. Because Larry has that song that's like,
Yes.
everybody has a water
Water
buffalo. And then there's
buffalo.
another one where Larry's looking all over, where's my hairbrush? And so Jesus asks Larry, did you ever find your hairbrush? And this has just like been 2 weeks now that I've been doing this. And I cannot keep up with all the people that are like, can I please buy this? So I sell them for $5. I usually will say I'll trade you this for a donation to my art supplies fund because I'm not really
Yeah.
making money on it. And I don't know the laws about like selling pictures of Jesus that I didn't draw
Yeah.
and VeggieTales that I didn't draw. Someone told me it was fine. I was allowed to do it, but and they're a lawyer, but I don't really know. So
Is
I
Jesus
just, I don't know. So I just
copyrighted?
put all the money I get goes right back into buy more Jesus books,
Buy
buy
more
more
books.
laminating sheets, buy more glue sticks, but like, and it's so much fun. Like,
I
I
need a
can't
piece of
get
your
enough.
art.
And it's healing.
Oh,
It's
yeah, I'll
healing to
send you
make
some
the
for
art.
sure.
Like, oh, heck, I was looking at it and I was
Yes.
like, oh, I could do this
Yeah.
because I can't really draw either. I have tried to teach myself multiple times, but it's the one thing I keep failing at. So,
Okay, so then the James Dobson, like I his book, The Strong-Willed Child, I make these
yes.
strong-willed club like membership cards. And
Oh, I love
I
that.
cut it out, like the actual strong-willed words are from
From the book.
okay, and I just discovered this. I don't know if you can see this, but the strong-willed is from the book, and then that the word that says club, that said child. And I cut up the word child and I turned like that's part of the
Yes.
I turned the H upside down and turned it into a U, and I made it.
I
I was like,
love it.
oh, I didn't know you could turn child into club. So the strong-willed
Can
club. And then
I
I'm,
tell you,
yeah, go ahead.
my dad talking about the strong-willed child. My parents bought that book and they told me as they were reading it that they bought it just because of me.
Oh my
Well,
gosh,
and
that
now
is
it's a
so
badge of honor. So
terrible.
I'll send you can be a lifetime member of the strong-willed club because now
Yes.
we love being strong-willed women. And then
Yes.
this
I didn't
marriage,
even know it was a compliment.
well,
It
it's not. He didn't, it
wasn't.
wasn't to him, but we're taking it
No.
back.
That's
But
right.
this Marriage Under Fire book he wrote, it's complete crap, but it's about he's trying fighting for his life against gay marriage. And this was
Yes.
years before it became legalized. But I went from there to Tim LaHaye's The Unhappy Gays from 1978. So I'm pulling out stuff. It's funny. I make
I
the
would
art
literally
funny.
take that unhappy
Yeah.
gaze one and literally just take the un off and make it
Yeah.
the happy gaze.
It is. I'm pointing out how, like, just what trash it is, but
Yes.
also it's harmful. And putting it on the
Yes.
art is just my way of showing people. Well, it grabs your attention, it gets people to read it. But I think it's
Yes.
important to know how we got here. And this is how we got
Yes.
here. I have.
Exactly.
When I post things on Instagram, it's mostly good folks that are paying attention. But then on Facebook, my post goes to Facebook, and a
Ooh,
lot of
some it's
people,
dicey over there
well,
sometimes.
it's fine on my wall because all those people went away that didn't like me, but people started sharing it to their Facebook walls. So I'm getting all of
Oh.
these people that I've
Yes.
never met. And I'm,
Second generation.
yeah, some of their
Yes.
responses, it just reminds me. People still, yes, this is 1978. It's very dated. It's wild. But some people have this exact same mentality
Yes,
still.
today.
Like they believe this stuff still. And their things are based in nothing. And yeah, it's heartbreaking, it's harmful, and just speaking up and out against it. And if we all do that, I just have to believe like
We
that.
have the power to change the world if we wake enough people up, really,
And we
because I was in religious spaces for 36 years, didn't know all this harm was happening. I didn't know the church had a body count, for goodness sakes. I was so clueless. And I think about that so long. Like, how were you so clueless to so much harm for so long? Like, but I
Because
wasn't
we put our heads in
it's because
we're
of the I
like an
was raised in a
ostrich.
bubble. Yeah.
We like stick our head in the ground and say, oh, that's not me, that's
And
them,
that's for the
that's
Lord
not
to handle.
them.
You know, the Lord's ways are higher than our ways, you know, and the more evil and horrible the world got, the closer Jesus was coming back. So we weren't concerned because he was coming to get us anyhow, you know. Forget the rest of the people. And now it's like, wow, that's really cold. Like, that's so inhumane. There is no empathy and compassion when you believe like that, you know? And hearing the stories of people, you know, that have been harmed by these beliefs has completely changed my life. Like, I will never look at church the same way again. I will never look at people that hold these beliefs the same way again. Because if you're following Jesus, like the red letter guy, okay, not Paul, Jesus, but if
There's a
you're
difference.
following him, you should be led towards more love, more compassion, more empathy, more washing of the feet, feeding people, clothing people, all the things, you know? And I think of how long I spoke that, but didn't live it, you know? And since deconstructing, I live it now so much more than I ever did. And I so wish that this would have been the version of me all them years ago. Because my God, the things that
Same.
I could do, the things that I could achieve, the people that I could help, right? But here I am at 45. Like, I feel like I'm just
Wait
getting started at life all over again, for
a
goodness
minute, I'm the
sakes, you
oldest one
know?
in the room. I'm not usually
It's
the
all good.
oldest one in the room. Listen, we're not ageist around here,
Not at
okay?
all.
No. Because some
Unless
of us get
you're
started
Mitch
young.
McConnell and you're still trying to be a senator.
I'm sorry. The fact that somebody propped him up next to his wife and photoshopped that. Well, maybe it's true. Maybe it's true. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and
But
posted a
he
statement from
reversed
him.
aged. He reversed aged in that picture. You ain't convincing me.
Looks pretty good for a dead man.
Well, Marla, I am so grateful that you decided to come and sit down with us today, you know, and talk to us, because it's always important for us to continue to share our stories with other people and elevate the voices of others. And I love smart, stinking, powerful, strong women. Like, it just gets me excited, especially after coming out of patriarchy.
I have a question. You
Okay.
said you had children. I raised my children for the first 5 years of their lives, in pretty high-controlled religion, right? A cult. How are they? Because I realized that while I deconstruct and while they watched me go through survival mo mode of abuse and the harm that trauma in religious spaces has caused, that it wasn't just affected me, and my voice should not only just be my voice, but I have extended a peace offering to my children and said, your story deserves to be heard. If you would like to share with me, because I'm in the process of writing a book. So each of my children, I wanted to give them a space. But when you said that you have children, I am always interested in how did they accept your deconstructing? What did they think? Because if you were in church that long, a lot of times our children just are a part of the product that we continued, right? My children, I have one that is a non-denominational. I have a pagan and I have an atheist. And the two of them are both anti-theist, you know? So I've realized that, and I very much, when they turned 18, I sat down with each of them when they turned 18 and told them that if that was their journey and their journey took them back to the cult, as much as I would still talk out against it and as much as I would speak out against it, that their journey and their spirituality and their religious is their journey. And it's truly mine to respect that. And I know that I picked him up, moved him across the world, and took him away from everything to make sure I avoided the harm of, that the cult caused. But I'm always curious in other moms on what does that look like with your children today? What do they say about you? What do they think about everything you see? My kids are damn proud of me. They're like, yeah, you go, mom. Fuck them, fuck them, fuck them, fuck them. You go. But I mean, on a deeper level, you know, I'm well aware of the fact that my choices that I made, that I followed James Dashen's teaching, that I did blanket training, that I did these things with my children, not out of to harm them. I thought I was obeying God's will. I thought the strong-willed child was what I was supposed to incorporate into their lives. Luckily, they were in 3, 4, and 5 when, you know, I packed them and moved across the country, right? But would you mind sharing with me so I can understand?
Yeah, I'll give you an abbreviated version for two reasons. One, I could talk about it for like 5 hours.
Right, me too.
And two, I'm always respectful of them as young adults
Yes,
not to
exactly.
share anything they wouldn't want
Same,
me to share
same,
now.
same.
So fast forwarding all the way to now, they are 3 daughters, 25, 24, and 20. And they're the most amazing humans that I have ever known. Like I love them so much and I like them so much and they're so funny. But yeah, I started deconstructing. They were young. I don't always realize how young they were. I'll make a reference to a Bible story or something because I've read the Bible so many times. I know all the stories. I know everything. And they'll look at me like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "Oh, you don't
I
remember?
love that for
Hey, you don't
them.
remember?"
I love that for them. How
But
cool.
I will say that a couple regrets. Number one, the man that I chose to marry, who is their father, and turned out to be not a great guy. I'm not going to diagnose him, but I would say that he checks all the boxes for covert narcissism. He cheated on me for 4 years and then left right after we moved back from Cambodia, middle of a pandemic. Like it was a nightmare. Abandoned his kids, moved back to Cambodia to be with this woman. And they have not seen their dad since, so in 6 years. So that's the biggest regret that I have is that but without that dad, they wouldn't be here. So
And you would take them
right,
a
I
thousand
don't want
times
to take
over.
it, all the way away. So there's that. And then also my zealousness for Jesus and then changing the world. And then even as I deconstructed, just being so passionate about social justice to the point of fighting human trafficking in Cambodia. They were young kids and they were giving their lives for other people. And sometimes, many times, I wish that, I mean, it made them so empathetic and compassionate and amazing. And on good days, they wouldn't change a thing either. But on not so great days, they're like, why could I have just gone to a normal school and been a normal kid and had a normal life? So right now, and I'll tie this in with like the white guilt thing. I had a conversation a couple years ago with a black man who is a professor of like African literature. He's this like amazing guy, and we were in this group together, and he was talking to me, and I was telling about my journey, and he said something to the effect of, "You have paid your debt to society. You don't need to like keep doing all of this stuff." And I told him, I said, I don't feel that way. I don't read black books and help black friends or do I don't do it out of a sense of guilt anymore. It's literally just it's joy for me. But I do feel very strongly about reparations. Like I do feel like because not that I did really bad things and I have to I mean, I might have done some bad things. It was mostly out of ignorance. It was out of not knowing. Because of all of that, I want to spend the rest of my days making up for that. And that's how I feel about my kids too. Like they did have an amazing life, but they also missed out on some things, and they just have one parent taking care of them. And so that's another thing that I want to give them now things that they couldn't have before, but not in a pitying way necessarily. I just love them and I want their lives, I want them to thrive. I love my black friends. I want them to thrive. I love my queer friends. I want them to thrive. That's why I make this art, is to fight hate with art. And so everything I do, it's so there's so much joy. There's when I was a Christian, I did a lot of things I hated. Like I worked in church nursery
Same.
and I
My
did
goodness.
I just no. I love books. I love art. I love writing. I like this is it's I am so happy being me, and then I can just share that. I mean, I can give a platform to my friends. I can help them write their books. Like there's so much that I can do by being me, not by trying to convert them or get them to believe the way I believe or any of that. And so it's so freeing and it's made me so whole. And then I get to help other people become whole. I'm like, this is the life. Like this is so
It's
it's such
amazing.
a
I can talk about so many things with so many people, and the Bible never is involved.
Like,
It blows my mind.
and the
It's just, and the other thing that
same.
gets me too is that, like, one of the biggest things when I left the cult, I'm like, and I don't mean this wrong, but it was hard for me to understand I wasn't that special.
Yeah, because we were all told that
Like
we were the chosen
special,
ones.
chosen of God, you know? And it's like, oh, I'm just like my coworker. I'm just like my fellow human being. I'm not special. But those have been two amazing deconstructing awakenings for me. I can talk to you about art. I can talk to somebody else, and more things than just the weather, right? Because in church we were taught, well, you can't talk about Bible. You always have the weather. It was like a joke. And it's like, it was like we didn't have anything to talk about but Jesus. And we were so happy to talk about Jesus that we wanted to talk about Jesus everywhere we go. I was exhausted by that guy. And now it's like, oh man, we could talk about politics and feminism and black communities and being allies to all of these things. And I don't have to feel shamed or shunned at the end of my speech or when I'm done talking to them. I'm like walking away and going, I didn't invite them to church.
I remember some of those conversations though,
They
walking
bother you
away
now. You
feeling
started
guilty
laughing. You're like,
because I didn't
yeah.
ask them and I knew I should have, and I felt like I was being convicted. And oh
The
gosh,
person sitting
missed
beside you
that
on the
boat. I was
airplane.
guilting myself, like I'm guilting my own self here. Like the mind is a powerful thing.
Oh, this is so much fun.
It is.
Marla, it was a pleasure to meet you. I definitely want to know where I can reach out and get some art to put up and have with me from you. It has been a joy to know that there's women and strong women that say, you know what? What I was taught was wrong. What I did was not who I am today. But this is what I'm doing with the rest of my life. And it's a
Amen.
pleasure to have you a part of that
Raymond,
journey.
Raymond,
Amen.
Raymond, as Steve would say. I appreciate you so much. I am so grateful for you. And to our guests, as always, we are just so grateful that you guys have sat down and listened to us again. And next week, we're going to have another guest talking about Dobson as well. Again, all month this month, we are going to be talking about James Dobson and the impact his teachings have had. So if you like this episode, please hit that like and subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And I am going to put all of Marla's links in the show notes so you can find her art. You can find her books and not the Christian ones, okay? I'm going to link her newer poetry
Listen,
books that are good for the soul.
I may go
But
back and
if you
listen.
do find her old books, you're more than welcome to turn them into
Cut them
art,
up.
okay? You
Burn
can.
them.
Thank you again. I
Thank you
appreciate you
so
so
much for
much.
having me.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Religion has many victims, and these are the stories of how they survived.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by the host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2026.